Well, good evening. First night of practice period. How nice. We haven't done this for a while. So I think it will be very helpful, very useful for all of us. You have a new face? Have you been here before?
No.
Welcome. How did you hear about us? There are a lot of us out there, aren't there? This is Kobunchino Otokawa's lineage, so it's not quite the same as some of the others around, but we're all cousins or something. Some of us were just up in North Fork over the weekend practicing with mostly Berkeley and San Francisco Zen Center people who have a very different way of being in the Zendo and bossing each other around in incredible ways. They treat students like children, totally grown-up people who've raised children and themselves and have jobs and everything, and they step into the Zen Center and suddenly they're treating them like naughty children. It's very funny. That is not our tradition. But it's interesting to experience how other people do it. Chant the Heart Sutra a little bit differently. It's nice to hear it in our own way when we get back. I know everyone's on tenterhooks, and it's been an exceedingly complicated week. You would not believe how complicated this week has become. And it became even more complicated about an hour ago when my surgeon, my very nice doctor, called me up and said, the surgery is canceled. I have a urinary tract infection and they won't do it until it's over. So I have to take antibiotics for 10 days and blah, blah, blah. So everything that's all set just fell apart a very short time ago. We always say everything keeps changing. But when it happens, you think, wait a minute, it's not supposed to be like this. This is ridiculous. So now I have to go back to my calendar and figure out how to squirrel around things. But I will certainly be at Sesshin. So that part is all solved, and I'll be at Spot, no problem. And we'll just go on from there. I appreciate all your support. I've been picked up by everyone and sort of carried all this week. You know, people are writing me and calling me and saying, oh, we're all, you know, you're on our well-being list and everybody's chanting and nobody knows it's not going to happen. Well, maybe it'll help the infection clear up faster or something. So, in any case, we can just continue. So, since it's practice period and we were talking about people giving talks, I think it would be very well if those of you who were brave enough to plan to give a talk would please continue to make that plan and keep that notion so that when we begin after the sit, and the service, that whoever you are will give a 10-minute talk and then open for questions and see how it feels. It's a very wonderful experience, and you learn so much. Once you take this seat, you learn so much. You think you're learning now, but really, you have to really learn when you pretend to know something. So think about that as part of practice period. And then, as it said, Britt sent out a write-up. Somebody did. Wendy sent it out. From last year.
Wendy and Britt.
Okay. So basically it says that practice period goes back to Buddha's time, that it's very rainy in the summertime. It's so rainy you really can't see across the street, and everything gets flooded. So they stopped walking around and talking with people in different villages and all gathered together for an ango, it's called in Japanese, which means pleasant life or something like that, happy life, and arranged to practice together, which they and intensify the practice so that they're sitting more and maybe studying something and making it for I don't know how long they did it in India, and it's morphed in many different ways through China and Korea and Japan. But what we've inherited is about a month, which ends with a one-week session. And this year, we'll have a Shosan ceremony at the end when the students bring up their deep and powerful questions one by one for the teacher. We had this ceremony at Empty Nest on Sunday. The three teachers sat together up in the front, and one by one we took turns answering questions because there were 30 people there. So one person would ask, and then the next person would ask this person, etc. But the question is very big question. Yeah, I mean, sort of like, what is the meaning of life or something like that? And has to do not only with your knowledge of yourself and your own puzzlement, but also your knowledge of your teacher and the relationship. It expresses the relationship as well. So you can try to be mean if you want to. Put me in a corner and see if you can get me stuck somewhere. There's a kind of fun to it and a kind of deep reality and truth in it that comes out, not through thinking, because it happens so fast. You ask the question and bam, it's up to me to answer it as quick as I can. And then if you don't like the answer, then you press me, you know, that's not enough, or what do you mean, you know. So it's a very lively thing, very lively and very fun, and a lovely way to end sesshin. The questions?
The Shusan ceremony was at the very end, and I could have used another period to sitting after the ceremony, actually. I spent most of the day yesterday reflecting and feeling what happened.
Yes.
So I was lucky to have that day, actually.
Yes.
It's something that stayed with me, so I don't know, it's something maybe I don't know, consider or not. It's in the last moment that,
it was. It was intense, yeah.
Because when you're asking questions, somebody will ask your question in another way. Or I sometimes feel like every question is my question.
Yes.
So the answers, it was very, I don't want to say fulfilling, but I was very filled with something.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how good Sue and Sally felt about it.
But better not to think about it too much.
Oh, yeah. It was really
yeah.
Great way to
end. Yeah. Yeah. So as far as what you choose to do, in a lot of Zen centers, the teacher kind of assigns things that you're supposed to do, you know, memorize the Sandokai or do 5 hours of community work or something like that. But in our tradition, Koban always let us choose what we wanted to do based on what we were able to do. And nobody monitored us to check whether we were doing it right or doing it at all. So it's really up to you, as the whole practice really is. It's up to your own intention and how much you're willing to put into your practice. This is an opportunity to put a lot in if you feel inspired to do that. I would hope you would. I think there are tremendous benefits to it. We often get into a kind of coming to Tuesday night like going to Sunday school or something, you know, get a little hit and feel good for the rest of the week. But real Zen practice is a practice of sacrifice. It's a practice of giving up a lot, especially your own time and your own sort of self-indulgence. It doesn't mean a puritanical kind of rigidity at all, but really looking into the truth, into the Dharma, into what brings your life into some sort of harmony in this way that you feel, which is why you come in the first place, and how to develop that, create it and recreate it, so it can be of some benefit not just to yourself, but to your world. And each one of you is a world. And each one of you has a tremendous effect on how it unrolls, how it flows. So I encourage you to read the email that describes the Ango and choose something. I would recommend a Doksan for everybody to be sure to sign up for some kind of, whether you come to my house or wait till Sesshin, or I think there's a one-day sit before Sesshin, isn't there? So make that a chance to have at least one encounter with the teacher, because that too is very important. This whole practice is about relationship, and especially relationship with each other, because we're all doing this together, and with everything, because we are part of everything, and with the teacher, who is a kind of model and encouragement for you. So that's all my consideration about that, unless you all have a question. Sally?
Since this is my first practice period, and I'm not sure how this all unfolds, I'm wondering, do we make a public proclamation that we're going to do something, or do we have a buddy?
You can. You can have a buddy, and that's very helpful. Just to encourage each other. You can tell your teacher. You don't have to make a public proclamation unless you want to. Sometimes that helps you keep your promise, you know. But it's really your thing. But a buddy is a real good idea. And getting to know people that way is a wonderful thing too, in a new way. Yeah. Well, we have the Diamond Sutra still. We've got a whole other chapter. This is what we're studying. We should do introductions, though, before we do anything else, because otherwise we sit nameless.
Alden.
Ron.
Jeffrey.
Andy.
Britt.
Matthew.
Wendy.
And Joe.
Sally.
And Angie. So this is what we're studying. And we're on chapter 15.
We were talking about preparing or doing a little talk or whatnot. But I think that was based on if they were going to choose a book to study as a group.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe it's a good time to do basic main stories. Should we talk about a book or should we continue with the Diamond Decision? And I'm game for anything.
Yeah.
Confused as always.
I was thinking that you could pick something out of the Diamond Sutra or something else that interests you. Not a huge subject, but a small subject that you can do a little thinking about, a little sitting with, and then bring it up as a question and kind of open it up so everybody gets to consider the same question. That was my thought about it. So you have a chance to speak a bit about your own experience of the question and where your puzzlement is coming from, and then and what your understanding is, and then from there open it up. Does that seem doable to you all? Everybody's rolling their eyes. Well, let's try it. Let's see what happens. 10 minutes isn't very long, so... And it could be 5 minutes and then open it up for 5 minutes. That would do too.
So we're going to start this next week?
Yes. Yes. It's hard for me to think of next week, but yes. Yeah.
We're still going to do that. For 4 weeks, I guess, until the session and so forth, and then, or maybe going onward while you're having your procedure and so forth.
Yeah.
Do you want to sign up, or just have everybody kind of do this and then forget when time comes?
Well, we could wait, too, and not make it part of practice period. We could wait until I end up back in the hospital again. I will. So. What do you think? Shall we do it now, this month, or shall we wait until after Sesshin? When I'm gone.
Perhaps kind of a compromise is we plan with our plan of, like, I could see that some of us brought our books, and so when you do have your hip replaced, we'll do that. And if somebody wanted to do it during the practice period, they could do it and just contact you.
All right. Very nice, Donald. And okay. Lovely.
Run that by me again.
A question from the Diamond Sutra. If you want, as far as practice period, yeah. Let Angie know what chapter and when you want to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Because it is an opportunity. Practice period, I mean, that's a great practice.
Brilliant. Thank you. I wonder what time it is. I didn't bring a watch today.
It's 10 to 8.
Well, we have time to read the chapter, and I have a handout for it. Thank you. So why don't we do that? And it's a very sweet little chapter, and that's just about the amount of time we have. Does somebody want to read? It's 251.
I'm happy to do it.
And you'll read.
Okay.
Thank you, Andy.
Sorry.
251. Oh, it's a different thing. Yeah.
Did it start with furthermore?
Yes. Of course, it's all furthermore.
Furthermore, Subhuti, the man or woman renounced her self-existence during the morning as many times as there are grains of sand in the Ganges, and likewise renounced her self-existence during midday as many times as there are grains of sand in the Ganges, and renounce their self-existence during the afternoon as many times as there are grains of sand in the Ganges, and renounce their self-existence in this manner for many hundreds and thousands and millions and trillions of kalpas. When someone heard this Dharma teaching and did not reject it, the body of merit produced as a result would be immeasurable, infinitely greater. How much more so if they not only wrote it down, but grasped it, memorized it, recited it, mastered it, and explained it in detail to others. Furthermore, Subhuti, inconceivable and incomparable is this Dharma teaching. This Dharma teaching spoken by the Tathagata, Subhuti, for the benefit of those beings who set forth on the foremost of paths, for the benefit of those beings who set forth on the best of paths. For if someone grasps, memorizes, recites, and masters this Dharma teaching and explains it in detail to others, the Tathagata will know them, Subhuti, by means of his Buddha knowledge. And the Tathagata will see them, Subhuti, by means of his Buddha vision. The Tathagata will be aware of them, Subhuti, for all such beings produce a body of merit that has no limits, a body of merit that is inconceivable, incomparable, immeasurable, and boundless. For all such beings as these, Subhuti, likewise, wear enlightenment upon their shoulders. And how so? Subhuti, this Dharma teaching, cannot be heard by beings of less aspiration, not by those who mistakenly perceive a self, nor by those who mistakenly perceive a being, a life, or a soul. For beings who lack the bodhisattva aspiration cannot hear, grasp, memorize, recite, or master this Dharma teaching. Moreover, Subhuti, wherever this sutra is explained, that place shall be honored, whether in the realm of devas, humans, or asuras, that place shall be honored with prostrations and circumvallations. That place shall be like a stupa.
Thank you. Well done. When I reread this afternoon, I thought of this place and thought, this is the stupa. We should go and circumambulate it, round and around. So this is called the merit of understanding the sutra. So it's about merit again. And this is a whole different level of merit. It's one thing to be able to recite a little bit of it. It's another thing to disabuse oneself of one's self-clinging, the great me. But it's a completely different thing when one begins to want to share it and open it up and truly dare to understand what it's really saying. So then great merit develops. And merit in terms of of the kayas, of the bodies of Buddha, the Dharmakaya, the truth, which is the law body, they call the Dharmakaya, meaning the whole thing as it unfolds, as it rolls through the many universes. That is the Dharmakaya. Not exactly the rules that run it, but how it all is flowing and constantly changing and is itself always expression of true, of what is true, of the truth. And the Sambhogakaya, this greater merit, is by sharing with others. That is the Sambhogakaya. That is the Dharmakaya in expression, in relationship. And of course, it requires a body, and that's the Nirmanakaya, the Buddha body on the ground. Sheng Yi says the physical body depends on karma for its existence and has no nature of its own, just as a wave depends on the wind for its existence and has no nature of its own. The sea is one, while waves are countless. So I think the rest of this is, the notes that I'm handing out are pretty easy. There's a mention of Dipankara, a poem by Cold Mountain that goes, they say when Shakyamuni first heard Dipankara's prophecy, Dipankara and Shakyamuni spoke only of past and future sages. Past and future bodies didn't matter. How they differed didn't differ. For each and every Buddha, the mind is a Tathagata's realm. Dipankara was the very first Buddha, way back in the deepest, darkest ages, before all there were 24 ancient Buddhas before Shakyamuni Buddha came along. But Shakyamuni Buddha was there with Dipankara as an ascetic, and they had a conversation, and he vowed to become a Buddha, this ascetic. And Dipankara saw that this would happen and that he would become a Buddha. And so they talked about it. And he now is often present. If you have statue of Buddha in the middle, you have Maitreya, the future Buddha, on one side, and Dipankara on the other, from the deep, deep past. So let's pass these out. We're giving it short shrift tonight, I'm sorry. Just the way it comes out. Are there questions?
sharing with others is or I'm asking, sharing with others. It's not sharing Dharma, but Dana and compassion and all of that sharing? Or is it?
It's sharing the truth of the diamond, which means you carry the truth of the diamond in you, and as you are in the world, it's in the world. So unless you resist it, and that's what it's talking about, if you deny it and try to avoid it, then you're not sharing it. But it doesn't mean necessarily going out, and in fact it doesn't mean going out and preaching something, because we don't preach.
It's in presence. It's in being.
It's in being itself, yes. Ron?
We don't go out and preach in some kind of a cathedral of light or something, or, you know, mega church, but it's okay if we talk to people, we might be.
If we're asked.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Maybe we could share something of what we thought or imagined we have come to realize through our practice. I don't know if anybody's going to come up and say, oh, by the way, could you tell me about how you got into Zen and what it means to see it? You know, it doesn't necessarily exactly work that way normally for me at any rate. But I do sometimes share something without trying to be preachy or righteous. Like, well, you know, I used to be an angry, temperamental person myself sometimes, but it got a lot better because I did this practice.
It's
okay, you know.
Yeah. You don't even have to call it Buddhism.
Yeah.
Better not to call it Buddhism. It isn't necessarily. Yes, but practice for sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's, I agree. That's encouraging for people. Jeffrey?
I typically say my spiritual practice, but they don't confuse it with like a golf game.
Or
another kind of practice.
Yes.
I find that that's really helpful, and that encourages people if they're of any interest at all. But beyond that,
Better not. We think we're helping people, but often we're not. You know, it's a shaky ground.
It reminds me of the story where Jack Kornfield, probably remember it or know it, is one of his first books he wrote when he came back from Thailand. He wanted to show who he was, and so he went down to New York City and with his head shaved and dressed in all the gold and robes and everything. And you know, nobody gave him any mind, and kind of ignored him. I thought he was weird. His parents would hardly talk to him, and his friends said, oh, you're just, you know. And he said, as soon as he took that off, he had so much more. He said something like, my life got so much easier. I could talk about my practice so much more than I could.
I actually remember the quote. It goes, when I was a Buddhist, nobody liked me, or my parents didn't like me, or something like that. And the minute I became a Buddha, Then people liked me. It was an interesting, different way of framing the whole question about how you want to manifest. So I found that really interesting. It is a good one. I wrote that down in my journal inside because I. I related to it.
Yeah.
I think we all do it.
Yeah. Well, it's after 8:00.